From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. This week, you didn't have to be in Belgium to feel the reverberation of bombs in Brussels. British Prime Minister David Cameron.
These were attacks in Belgium. They could just as well be attacks in Britain or in France or Germany or elsewhere in Europe. And we need to stand together.
And French Prime Minister Manuel Valls said Europe's very survival is at stake.
C'est une autre guerre parce que...
It's another war because terrorism, this terrorism, Islamic State, wants to destroy us. It wants to destroy men and women. We've seen it.
Writing in The Guardian this week, French journalist Nicolas Henin criticized world leaders for depicting the challenge posed by ISIS this way. Quote, if we adopt a militaristic, warlike vocabulary, there'll be no way back from that. We will only strengthen our enemies, he wrote. Henin should know, in 2013, while reporting in Syria, he was kidnapped and held hostage by ISIS for nearly a year. He shared a cell with James Foley, Stephen Sotloff, Peter Kasich, and more than a dozen other Western captives. Mohamed Emwazi, better known as Jihadi John, an oft-videoed executioner, was one of his jailers. After Henin's release, filled with what he called accidental knowledge of jihadism, he wrote Jihad Academy. In the book, he punctures Western conventional wisdom about ISIS and the Syrian conflict and lays bare what he sees as our deadly misperceptions of ISIS. Nicholas, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you.
So, you essentially make the argument that the West, and particularly the Western media, buy into the myths that ISIS is selling, right?
Yeah.
Let's go through some of them. A big one has to do with the relationship between the Syrian regime and ISIS.
No, exactly.
The government,
we believe that they're enemies. They are not enemies. They cooperate together.
They cooperate together.
Of course.
Their relationship is symbiotic.
Yes. ISIS needs the regime to kill Syrians in huge numbers. So then ISIS can come and tell the Arab Sunnis in Syria, well, we are the bad guys, powerful enough to protect you. We are like your godfathers.
ISIS says that.
Yeah, ISIS says that. And the regime, meanwhile, needs ISIS as life insurance.
Life insurance?
Yes, of course. Because as long as ISIS is here, then, the West will be terrified and will say, well, maybe Bashar al-Assad is a lesser problem. This regime, which claims today that it fights terrorism, that it is secular, is nothing like that. All the foreign fighters who joined the Iraqi insurgency in the early years of the American occupation of Iraq, they all transited through Syria. And this transit was managed by the Syrian intelligence. The regime played with terrorism to, ensure its future.
We've seen the rise of ISIS making its capital right inside of Syria. And you're saying that was also according to Assad's plan. And that's something that we fail to understand, which is critical, right?
Yeah. Assad needs ISIS to survive. He released jihadi prisoners at the very early stages of the revolution. He declared an amnesty. But this amnesty did not concern all the Democrats. They stayed in prison. All the political prisoners in jail, they stayed in jail. But all the jihadists, they were released because he wanted a civil war. He wanted this revolution to become a civil war. And for the very same reason, he also created tremendous fear among the minorities in his country. So that the Syrian Christians, for instance, are convinced that if ever the revolution succeeds, then they will be either dead or will have to flee, which was at least at the beginning totally wrong. Yes, there is definitely now concerns for the future of the minorities in Syria. But at its early stage, it was just people begging for its freedom.
You also suggest that our misperceptions lead to actions, or the lack of actions, that actually create self-fulfilling prophecies.
For instance, one of our main mistakes is to believe that ISIS is a problem. No.
What?
ISIS is just a result of the problem. If we fight only ISIS, it's just like if we fight fever but don't care of the disease. No, we have to fight the disease. And the disease, what is it? It is the massacres being committed against the Syrian population. I mean, since the beginning of this revolution, over 300,000 Syrians have been killed. Do you know that the Syrian regime has killed between 7 to 10 times more civilians since the beginning of this civil war than ISIS? So it is our short view on this and our only focus on ISIS and terrorism because we are afraid of these guys. And it's normal because it is their job to terrorize us. It is this which creates the conditions for ISIS to be so prosperous.
You wrote that it is often enough just to cry wolf to create a wolf. Violence produces violence just as despair breeds radicalization and hate feeds hate.
You know, I've covered as a journalist not only the war in Iraq, because I arrived in Baghdad 5 months before the American soldiers, and I covered intensively the Syrian revolution. I've been there 5 times, each time for a long time. And when I arrived first in Syria, this revolution was very peaceful, very joyful. People were dancing in the streets. And I've seen this revolution progressively being militarized and radicalized.
Well, they were happy initially because there would be some support like there was for the Libyan revolution.
And there wasn't. There wasn't any support. And they have been massacred. And I mean, I'm not going to advocate for violence. But this violence is somehow a natural reaction. When a friend of mine, a Syrian opponent, told me, you know what, if the Dalai Lama was Syrian, today he would be a jihadist. If you live among fear and mourning, well, you eventually look for some kind of revenge. It's just because you have nothing else. You realize how fragile is your life.
You say that the Western obsession with the jihadists, the security threat that they represent, comes at a very high cost because it allows the Syrian regime to get away with precisely the kind of brutality that you just described.
Yeah, and basically, what does it mean? It means that, yes, we have to fight ISIS, but we have also to counter the Syrian regime, because I don't know what the future of this country will look like. But there is one thing I know for sure. It is not possible to destroy ISIS as long as the Syrian regime is in place.
Another misjudgment of the Western media that you highlight is one that has been echoed by a number of terrorism experts, that we, in elevating ISIS to evil incarnate, We
serve their purposes. They put themselves on some kind of pedestal, like, okay, we are the very bad guys, we are the worst terrorists of any time. And this promotes them. Because if you are like a youngster from a western suburb and you want to rebel, well, you will just join the best bad guy of any time.
So we've got the Western obsession we have to deal with. This notion that the Syrian regime will in any way be helpful in the fight against ISIS is profoundly misleading. Our inaction is not dealing with the causes of the disease. So that's another
one. Exactly.
When you were in captivity, Jihadi John was among your jailers. Being face to face with them for so long, what do you understand that we can't?
It's not very trivial.
They are very trivial?
Yeah, they are very normal guys. They're just like street kids, mostly. And this is my advantage on you. You see ISIS fighters only through the videos that they produce. But I lived among them for 10 months, so I don't buy the legend anymore.
Nicholas, I want to ask you a bit about your captivity. Simple questions, some of which aren't so simple. You don't want to talk about them, that's fine. But I just thought I would try, okay? First of all, how were you captured?
Very normally. I mean, like like any hostage, you know, like in a movie. Have you seen a movie with a hostage being taken?
Did they put a hood over your head and throw you in a car?
Exactly.
Seriously?
Just like this. Just like this.
Wow. Do you know where you were taken?
No, yes. I found the location on Google Map.
Where was it?
Well, that was a facility a bit outside of Reykjavik.
Uh-huh. What did your cell look like?
My very first cell was a bathroom, but I've been in over a dozen of cells altogether.
Uh-huh.
Moved from Raqqa to Aleppo and a bit in the countryside and then back to Raqqa. So they were good at making me visit the country.
Good tourism. Were you like chained?
Sometime, yeah. Especially sometime handcuffed together with Jem Foley.
Had he already been in captivity for a long time? He seemed to be the senior captive.
Yes, he was.
Sometimes you were in a cell with as many as 19 hostages?
Yes.
And they were from different countries?
Yes.
How did you negotiate space? I mean, were there tensions? Did you guys argue? Did you talk?
Sometime we had a nice chat together. Sometime we had some arguments. Well, it's life. I mean, just try to spend 3 or 4 months with just 18 others, each of us having 1 square meter, and you will see...
One square meter?
Yeah, 1 square meter.
You played chess?
Yes, we did.
How?
We improvised chess games. Steven Sotloff even made a risk game. So we
risk?
Played, yeah, with a pen that we have taken from one of our captors and using small pieces of cardboard from packages of food.
When you think about your time in captivity, is there a particular memory or a feeling that jumps out at you?
I would say it's a long journey to recover from it.
You said that it really was kind of like the movies. And I'm just wondering, is there anything about your captivity that we haven't seen on the big screen?
No. It was just like in a movie. And by the way, even the people going to Syria, joining ISIS in Syria to fight, even these people see themselves as movie characters. They play their own movie. This is why I think that the most powerful way to fight ISIS are not bombs. It is to kill the narrative. We have to write another movie. We have to build other heroes. And this is why I believe that the French are making big mistakes in the way they fight ISIS. We created, for instance, accounts on the social media named Stop Jihadism. And this is like, they did not understand anything. And I did understand why we are so bad. It's just because in France, we don't know how to write TV series properly. Just because we have no imagination. We cannot just tell beautiful stories, create beautiful characters, beautiful heroes. And this is what we have to do. Because in our world, in our societies, what do people want? They want to become heroes. They want to be famous. They want to be recognized. And this is by lack of recognition that youngsters from our countries are joining ISIS just because they want to become someone. They want to be somebody. Our society don't give them a chance. So we have to create our kind of heroes. We have to kill the narrative, creating our heroes and not using the codes of the enemy. And we are totally failing in that. Even the TV reports that we are doing on ISIS, what do we do? We are just using their propaganda pictures. This is totally wrong.
Thank you so much.
Well, sorry for being sometimes a bit noisy.
Nicholas Hennin is the author of Jihad Academy.
Thank you.